Now we're holding on page Nun Hei in Tainis, the very top of the page, middle of Ois Lamed Aleph. We learned previously a Machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, where does the world's supply of rainwater come from? Rabbi Eliezer says that it comes from the oceans, that the water evaporates and then forms clouds, and then it falls from the clouds. Rabbi Yeshua says it comes from the Mayim HaYonim, it comes from, on the second day of Ma'ase Bereishis, Hashem separated the waters, you have Mayim Tachtonim and Mayim HaYonim, there's Mayim HaYonim up there, and Rabbi Yeshua says that's where the rain comes from, and the Gemara was discussing various details within that, and where each of them learns their opinion from. So the Gemara says, Keman Ozla Hodetanya, according to which of them does the following Braisa go? The Braisa says, Mayim HaYonim and Mayim HaHem Tluyim. The upper waters are hanging there because of Hashem's word. They're not resting on anything. There's nothing physical for them, nothing physical that supports them. They're staying there like in a pool, and they're staying there because Hashem told them to be there. Okay, Sehen, and the fruit of them, the outgrowth of them, make Shamim, is the rain that we get. In other words, Shanema, Mitri Ma'asecha, Tisma Aretz, the pasuk says the earth is satiated, is satisfied with the fruit of your hands. So in other words, we're meant to understand that Rashi says, just like we say by certain mitzvahs, that Peter Sayan, Ba'olam Azeva, Karen Payim Eslalam Abba, in other words, there's dividends of them in this world, but then the entire thing of it remains Ba'olam Abba. The same way over here, you have, there's a pool of water in Shamayim, which is where the Mayim Elyonim, and the Peiris of it, the dividends of it, is what falls for us as rain, and meanwhile, none of the actual water that's up there is lost, and the aquifer over there, so to speak, up above, is not getting any smaller. So which of these opinions does that follow? Keman to Rabbi Yeshua. That would apparently be like Rabbi Yeshua, who says that the world gets its water from the Mayim Helyon. V'Rabbeliezer Omaloch, what would Rabbeliezer answer? How would he understand that? How would he understand that statement and that pasuk? He would say, Ahuba Maisi Yadav Shalakadosh Baruch Hu Ksiv. That pasuk is talking about how Hashem made things in the first place. Marshall says, Marshall brings a different gusa, Bibriyosi Shal Olam Ksiv, that it's referring to the creation of the world. Either way, it says it means the same thing, that Hashem created in the first place that there should be water to satisfy, to slake the thirst of the earth. So Rabbi Yezer is saying, on an ongoing basis, it comes from the water and the oceans and the other bodies of water evaporating. But to begin with, Hashem created, Rabbi Yezer agrees, of course, it says right there in the pasuk, that Hashem put up Mayim up above. So Rabbi Yezer is saying, yes, Hashem did create that, and the world does benefit from that. But as far as the main water for the main, so the purpose of that, Hashem created rain, Hashem created water in general in order to satisfy the earth, but not necessarily we're talking that it comes specifically from the Mayim HaYonim. In other words, you would say prima secha means in general, Hashem, you created water, and it has the function, of satisfying the earth by raining on it. But it doesn't say anything about where it comes from. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Keman Ozla Hodichtiv. What about this that it says in another pasuk? Mashka Horim Mal Yosef. The pasuk says Hashem waters the mountains from his upper stories, from his upper chambers, which is the first half of that pasuk. Trima Sechat Tisparet. Va'omer Rav Yochanan Mal Yosef Shalakadosh Baruch Hu. So Rabbi Yochanan says the word Me'al Yosef over here means from the upper chambers of Hashem. So what does that mean? In other words, Rashi says without Rabbi Yochanan's statement, we would have thought what it means is Hashem stands there in Al Yosef in the upper chambers and sends down water to us. You wouldn't know where the water itself is coming from. Rabbi Yochanan clarifies that it means there's an upper chamber over there which contains water, and Hashem sends it down to the earth. So who does that go according to? Command to Rabbi Yeshua. That would go according to Rabbi Yeshua, who says that the world is getting from Mayim HaYonim. Whereas according to Rabbi Eliezer, we would have said that, no, it's coming from Mayim Tachtonim. Yad Yosef makes a point over here. He brings that the Mayim HaYonim is complete chesed, and therefore that's where, when you have, when rain falls, as Gishme Brocha, then it comes from there. So that's what it means. When the Pasuk praises Hashem, Mashkahor Mal Yosef, that Hashem waters the earth from his upper chambers. So according to Rabbi Yeshua, so Rabbi Yochanan is telling us something which fits better with Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, that it means the water itself comes from the upper chambers. Maharsho explains differently, actually. Maharsho refers to a medrash that says, now like this we have, we brought before the Pasuk, the Eid Yalam and Aretz, that a mist would come up from the earth, a cloud, and water the whole world, by Ma'aseh Bereishis. The medrash brings on this that Hashem's original plan, so to speak, was that the water would always come from below. Instead of there having to be rain, there would always be the underground aquifers would rise up towards underneath the earth and water the ground from the bottom. Then the Medrash says Hashem decided for a number of reasons not to do that. One of them being based on the pasuk that was saying over here, Mashbahar and Mal Yosef. If you have like that, then the lowlands are going to get well watered by the underground springs, but the mountains will not because the water is not going to be able to reach that high. So that was one reason why Hashem decided instead there needs to be rain, and that way everything gets watered equally. And the Medrash brings other reasons as well, one of them being that when there's rain, which is unpredictable, then it causes people to look up at Hashem and to realize that everything comes from Him. Anyway, so Maharsha says, without Rabbi Yochanan's statement, you would say that it means Mash Tahar Mal Yosef, that Hashem makes sure that the mountains, in order that they should get well watered, then Hashem makes sure that rain falls on them. That wouldn't necessarily mean that it's coming from an upper chamber in Shemayim. You could still understand it. The way Rabbi Eliezer says that means, okay, of course, rain comes from up above. Everybody can see that. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, where it comes from evaporation from the oceans, so you would say, fine, Hashem set up a rain cycle for that reason, for one thing, in order that the mountains are rained on just as much as the plains. You wouldn't know that the water is coming from an upper chamber over there in Shemayim. That's what Rabbi Yochanan is being machadish for us. So now that would be specifically according to Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer, what does Rabbi Eliezer answer? Amalach, he'll tell you, Kivin dekasliki lahasam. Fine, once the water goes up there, once it goes up and evaporates and forms the clouds, commander also mahasam dami, then we can call it as if it came from there, even though the individual droplets of water actually came from evaporation. And he proves that. De'ilai temahochi, after all, if you're not going to say it like that, if you're going to say that things are called from Shemayim only if they originate there, not if they temporarily were there. What about Hodichtiv? You have a pasuk in the Tochacha, in Kisavai, where it says, Mitar Artzacha Ovak V'Ofer Min HaShemayim. Moshe warns in Hashem's name that Hashem is going to send down the rain of your land will be dust and dirt from the heavens. So what do you mean? How does dirt and dust descend from the heavens? Ella, given to madly lahasam, what it means is, earlier in the parak, the Gemara explains, Rashi brings it on the pasuk, what it means is, there's going to be very little rain, just enough to get the plants wet, then there's going to be wind storms, dust storms, that raise up the dust, and then it lands, it falls on the plants, which now are, if the plants were dry, nothing would happen, the sand and dirt and whatever that falls on them would just blow right away. Instead, because they're wet from that little bit of rain, therefore the dirt sticks to them and it becomes muddy and then the plants rot. So Moshe is calling it Matar Arzacha Ovak V'Ofer Min HaShemayim. He's calling it the dirt and dust that comes from heaven, even though it doesn't come from heaven, it comes from earth that's stirred up by the wind. Ela Kivin to Madli Lahasam. The point is, once it's lifted up into the atmosphere, Min HaShemayim Korilei, then we can call it that it comes Min HaShemayim, even though each individual molecule of dirt comes from earth. Hachinami Kivin to Sliki Lahasam, the same word. But as I can say, once the individual droplets of water vapor come from the earth, from the oceans, from evaporation, and they go up to the clouds, Me'al Yosef Korilei, it can still be called Me'al Yosef, it can still be called that it's coming from Hashem's upper chambers, but we don't have to say that it comes from that pool of water, the Mayim El Yonim, that are described in Parshas Bereishis. And Maharsha also adds the point over here that, yeah, now you have the pasuk that says specifically about Eretz Yisrael, Limtara Shemayim Tishtamoyim, earlier in the sugya, when Rabbi Yeshua brought his opinion that the world gets watered from Mayim El Yonim, he brought the pasuk that says about Eretz Yisrael that it drinks of the rain of heaven. Now, Rabbi Eliezer could easily answer, again, that starts out on earth, but then it goes into the clouds, and therefore it can be called the rain of heaven. But Maharsha says he has a more straightforward answer. Precisely because Eretz Yisrael is mostly mountainous, therefore, based on that medrash, Hashem had to make that it's watered with rain. Otherwise, if it was watered from underground, the mountains wouldn't get the full effect of it. So therefore, sure, we can say when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, it has to get rain from above. And again, since that rain comes from what evaporates from earth, as Rebbe Eliezer is saying, rather than Mali Yosef, rather than coming from the upper chambers, as Rebbe Yeshua would have it. Okay, here's another one. Kiman oz v'hodo amr Rav Chanina. According to which opinion does the following statement of Rav Chanina goes, that when the Pasuk says, Koinis kaneid mehayom, the Pasuk says Hashem gathers in the water of the sea like a neid. Now, on the pasuk, when it comes to when you have an oz yosher mitzvah k'may neid noizlim, Rashi makes the point over there that neid means a wall. It doesn't mean, Rashi points out, there's a very similar word noid that means a flask of a bag that contains liquid. It doesn't mean that over here because koinus kaneid, Rashi points out the same way. So in oz yosher mitzvah k'may neid noizlim, it can't mean they stood up like a flask. A flask doesn't stand up. It's soft and floppy. And koinus kaneid mehayom also doesn't mean that Hashem puts it into a flask, because then the word koinus wouldn't be appropriate. Rashi explains that it should be machnes kibinoid or something like that. So rather, neid means a wall. Here, on the other hand, Rashi does understand that the word neid is similar to the word noid, meaning a bag that contains liquid, and it means, in other words, that Hashem gathered in when it came time to, on the third day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, when Hashem tells all the water, Yukavu Amayin, Al Makom Echad B'Seder HaYabasha, that Hashem is saying that all the water should gather together as though in a flask, so that the dry land will be visible, and then Hashem put sand around the bodies of water so that they can't cross it. There's a number of places in Tanakh where it mentions that point, that Hashem created sand around the ocean, and the ocean, as much as the waves heave to and fro, and they always look like they're coming to flood the earth, they come to that strand of sand over there on the beach, and then they break against it, and that's it. They can't go any further because Hashem told them not to. So here Rashi is explaining that the word koinus kaneid mehayom, Hashem gathers the water of the sea like a neid. Here Rashi explains it means like noid. At the beginning of the Masechta, I mentioned there are a number of achronim that talk about the possibility that maybe Rashi, Amtainus here, is not actually from Rashi. Maybe this is one of the proofs. Although you do find even among Rashi's own perushim, where sometimes he changes his mind, so we don't know. There's a number of arguments that have been brought to bear, among others, that first of all, this kind of thing, where Rashi in this Masechta contradicts what he says in other places. No, therefore, okay, Rashi explains the word neid can never mean noid. It always means like a wall. Therefore, for the word nitzvah, when neid knows them, it's appropriate because it means a wall. And koinus kaneid mehayom, Rashi says, means the same thing, that Hashem gathers together the water like a wall. But here Rashi is saying kaker, that it means noid. Now, if you have one place, okay, maybe it changes his mind. But when you have again and again, so that's one thing. There's other arguments brought to bear on it as well. The style is much different than Rashi and other Masechtas. You find much more in this Masechta than you do in others that Tosfos has to give. The Pirushim and Pshat, usually Tosfos gives more analytical explanations. Here they have to give a lot of simple Pshat explanations, which seems to imply that they didn't have a Pirush Rashi before them. So there are a number of arguments have been brought to bear on that. And then there's counter-arguments that say that maybe the core of it is from Rashi, and just it was recopied and then added to, and mistakes came in, mistakes crept into it or whatever. Anyway, okay. So Rav Chanina points out when the Pasuk describes that koinus kaneid mehayom, Hashem gathers the water of the sea like a neid, whether it means a wall, like Rashi says in Shmos, or whether it means, like Rashi says over here, a flask. Anyway, noisin ba'itzoris tohoimas, Hashem places the depths of the water in storehouses, meaning, in other words, again, that Hashem put the sand as a barrier around them, that they can't go any further out than that. So Rav Chanina explains, it means mi got, why are we calling it oitzros? Mi goram lo oitzros, she yismalu bar, what is it that causes that the storehouses should be full of grain? Tehoimus is the depth, so the fact that the water comes up from the depths and waters the ground. Keman k'Rav Eliezer. Necessarily, apparently, that would be like Rav Eliezer, because according to Rav Yeshua, the tehoimus don't really factor into it. It's the rain comes, according to Rabbi Eliezer, yeah, the water comes from the tehoimus, from the depths of the oceans, and evaporates and forms clouds and so forth. Whereas according to Rabbi Yeshua, it's coming from Mayim Helyonim. So what do the tehoimus have anything to do with it? What? Bar means grain. Grain. Gion. Grain. Tavor. Yeah. So Maharsha points out, actually, now the fact is, even when it rains, the fact is also, the Gemara mentions later in the Masechta, that the underground springs also grow larger. Because of that, you have a drop of rain comes from above, and you have two drops come out from the Tehoim, the three Tefachim, rather, coming out from the Tehoim, corresponding it. Still, Maharsha says, according to Rabbi Yeshua, if the main thing is, comes milamayla, and only then the Tehoim reciprocates it, then it wouldn't be appropriate to say, mi gorem ma'otzris shis malu bor Tehoimus, as if the main thing is the Tehoim, when according to him, that's only an outgrowth of it. Because you have rain, therefore you have the Tehoim reciprocates and wells up. So therefore, so it fits better with Rabbi Yezer's opinion. Rabbi Yeshua, so what would Rabbi Yeshua answer? He would say, ahu bribri yasa shalolim, see, that's talking about not the ongoing rain cycle. This is talking about when Hashem first created the world, where again, like Rashi is saying, he put all the water into the oceans and other bodies of water, and told it, you stay here and you don't go out of there without my permission. So that's so not like Rabbi Chanina is doubting that it means the Otsris in the future are watered from the Tehoimus, but rather that we mean the first time when Hashem first created the bodies of water, he put them in Otsris and said, this is where you're staying and you're not going out of it. Gemara continues on in this vein, talking about the rain and where it comes from. This is actually in the printed Gemara. This actually intersects with the previous discussion. We start out with the discussion of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, and then the Gemara brings the different memories of other Chachamim to see which one does it fit with better, according to Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. And then in the middle of it, the Gemara goes into the next piece about Eretz Yisrael versus the other lands, and then it goes back to Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. But anyway, so Tana Rabbanan, Eretz Yisrael Nivres Tchila. Eretz Yisrael was created first in the world, v'chol ha'olam kula nivrel v'asayf, the rest of the world was created only later. The Rashba has a long explanation over here, and Maharsha explains along similar lines. The point is, in other words, that Eretz Yisrael is the main focus for which Hashem created the world. So Hashem first created it, and then first he created the Iker, then he created the Tophel. It also includes the point that Hashem gives special Ashgacha Pratis over Eretz Yisrael, Eina Avaya Lekechaba, Mereshas Hashana Adachas Shana, more so than in other places, so therefore the other places are almost more like an afterthought in Hashem's mind, so to speak. The other places are delegated through Shluchim, as we're going to go on to say over here. Eretz Yisrael is under Hashem's special Ashgacha, so all of that goes with this point, in other words, that Eretz Yisrael is the focus of Hashem's Hashgacha more so than any other part of the world. Iyun Yaakov points out, we know the Torah of the world was created, B'Shvel HaTorah, or B'Shvel Yisrael, Shenikra Horatius. Well, therefore, Eretz Yisrael, which is meant as the special land of the Jewish people, had to be created first in the same way. If the Jewish people are created, one of the purposes for which the world is created, then the land where they're going to be able to fulfill mitzvahs most fully has to be created first. Also, Iyun Yaakov points out, you know, it's Alderach, like when Hashem, we know that Hashem first created the intense light of Yom Rishon, and then he saw that the world is not worthy for it, so he hid it away. Famously, the Baal Shem Tov says they should hid it in the Torah, which is how tzaddikim were able to see things going on in other parts of the world. Anyway, and then they should have created the regular light that we're familiar with. So here, Iyun Yaakov says a similar vein. The Eibishter created Eretz Yisrael first with the idea that, in principle, all of humanity should deserve to live there, but they don't live up to it. Therefore, the Eibishter had to create the rest of the world for them to be, for that to be places to live in. And in fact, when the Jewish people don't live up to living in Eretz Yisrael either, then it's denied to us as well, for the same reason, because the Eibishter sees that it's not Roy Lishtamishbar. So that's the idea behind this point of Eretz Yisrael being created first. So again, the idea is, again, the Rashba and Maharsha bring out the idea that the Eibishter's focus of his Hashgacha and everything is much more on Eretz Yisrael than other places. In fact, there's places in Tanakh where it calls Hashem Elokei Ha'aretz, the God of the land. Now, Hashem is the God of the whole world, but he has a special connection with Eretz Yisrael more than any other land. Eretz Yisrael was created first. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Adloi osa eretz v'chutzes. The pasuk describes how the Torah was there before Hashem created the eretz and the chutzes. So eretz means Eretz Yisrael, and chutzes means all the other lands that are outside. By the way, a couple of them Mephoshim talk about over here the point. The Gemara mentions in Yuma, Machlokas, whether the world was created beginning from the middle and then extending outward from there. According to that, the Eben Shesia was the first place that was created, or is it the other way around, that the Eben Shesia started at the edges and then brought it all together in the middle? Since it describes that Eretz Yisrael, it's mentioned in a few places that Eretz Yisrael is in the middle of the world, then if we say that the Hashem started from the side, then what it would mean is he started from the sides of Eretz Yisrael, and then worked his way toward the middle, and then continued with the other lands in the same way, working from the outside and working in. As opposed to, if we say that it's created from the middle first, then Eretz Yisrael, specifically the Eretz Yisrael, is created first, and then the Eretz Yisrael coalesces everything around it until he creates the world. So it's the foundation, but yeah, the Gemara mentions in Yoma Machlokas about that, whether in fact that was the foundation, whether everything began from there, or whether it began from the edges and then it was joined together over there. Yeah. Tanan Rabbanan, Eretz Yisrael Shosim Atchila. Eretz Yisrael is watered first. Rain falls there first. The whole Olam Kula shows him a soy, and the rest of the world drinks only afterwards. So the idea being, in other words, the Rashba and Maharsha explain, like the Hashem gives first the rain, which is under his direct hashgacha, to Eretz Yisrael, and then he delegates to the Shluchim, to the Malachim or whatever, to give to the rest of the world. The Sorim of the Shivim almost. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Noisin motar apnei oretz." Hashem gives rain on the surface of the earth, and again, eretz unspecified means Eretz Yisrael. V'sheleach mayim apnei chutzis, and then Hashem sends water in all of the outlying areas. So we see, first comes the eretz, then comes the chutzis. Maharsha adds, also the point is that for the other places, it's not even called motar. For Eretz Yisrael, it's called motar. For all the other places, it's mayim. It's like all you have is the outflow, like you have the dregs of it that flow, that the what do you call it, what you have, or the overflow goes to the other places. You can't even call it mutter over there. Now, the fact is, Ben Yehoyada points out, we do often see that's not so, that it rains in other places ahead of Eretz Yisrael. So he says primarily what we're talking about is when the Eretz decides on Rosh Hashanah what's going to be with the rain for the year. First he decides what's going to be with Eretz Yisrael, and then the rest of the world. So the Gashmias, sometimes it comes out in all world that way, and sometimes not, depending on what the status of the Olam Hazeh Gashmi is relative to Ruchniyistic worlds. Zal Darach, like actually there's a Sicha, one of the projects, Bechut Sicha, Sichas for this week, from Chelek of Gimel, that ever talks about the idea that we have all the cures and all of the medical advice that the Gemara gives all over the place, and that the Rambam gives a whole parak of it in Hilchos Deis and Lamaisa. We see that not all of it is effective, and many of them we're not even allowed to do because they're not effective anymore. How does that fit with the Nitzchias of the Torah? And that ever makes the point over there, because it really depends. These things are all true Beruchniyus. Sometimes the world and humanity is on a level that matches, that's in sync with how things are Beruchniyus, and then we see that these things are effective Beruchniyus, effective Gashmias, and sometimes not. So here in a similar vein, when the world is in sync with Ruchnius, then when it's decided, when the Eibishter decides, first rain for Eretz Yisrael, then for everywhere else, then attack comes in all world like that, but if not, then not. By the way, similar points that Eber Ashab makes at some length in Kuntres Amayim. We talked about it when we were learning the Sefer Rosh Hashanah, where you have the Machlokas over there about Adam Nidim, where a person is judged on Rosh Hashanah versus Bechol Yoim versus Bechol Shah. That Eber Ashab makes a point over there at some length that you can have, and all of them are true. And the point is that there's a hashpa that was decided in Milamayla on Rosh Hashanah for a person, and then every day it's decided, is it actually going to come out or is it going to be blocked someplace in the Olam HaSel Yonim for one reason or another? Continues the Gemara. Eretz Yisrael shows a made b'shamim. Eretz Yisrael drinks from the rainwater, again from the direct stuff. V'chol Olam Kula shows him itamtzis. Everybody else gets from the leftovers, from like what seeps out of it. Moshal Adam shem gabanes agvina. It's like when a person is making cheese. The process of cheese is you start out with milk. You put an enzyme into it, you put rennet into it, and then you have the cheese curds that causes the cheese curds to separate from the whey, and then they coalesce into a block of cheese. So he takes out the food, the cheese that results from it, and he leaves behind the waste, which is the whey. So Maharsha says, in other words, the point is you have three things over here. You're taking, that we're saying the rain in Eretz Yisrael is more, it's first and it's more direct,
and it's the main stuff, and it's the main thing, whereas everybody else is getting the tamsis. So therefore, that reflects that the cheese making process, where you have your first taking the food, and you're first taking the food, the cheese out, that represents how Eretz Yisrael gets first, or maniach hapsolos, and you leave behind the waste, represents how everybody else is getting the tamsis, and getting it only through a shliach. But like, so, in other words, the balabas himself, the cheesemaker, the cheese is important enough for him to take out himself, whereas the whey he leaves behind, and if anything, he'll delegate it to somebody else to deal with that. Another one, Eretz Yisrael mashka kodesh bochu ba'atzmoy. Hashem waters Eretz Yisrael himself, v'chol olam kule mashkeu aidei shliach. The rest of the world, Hashem waters by means of a shliach. Shenema, the same pasuk, Hanosin Motar Apnei Eretz, Hashem gives rain on the surface of the earth, implying that Hashem gives it himself, v'sheleach mayim, but he sends out water apnei chutzes to the outlying areas. In other words, like Hashem sends it out, like Hashem delegates it to a shliach to deal with the rain over there. So in this connection, the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Shimon ben Levi, kol ha'olam kulei tamtzisa shogan eden hu shoyse. The whole world then is actually getting from the overflow, from the seepage of what goes to Gan Eden. So in other words, Gan Eden gets the main rainwater, and then the whole rest of the world is getting the overflow, what's left over from that. Now within the world itself, we're saying Eretz Yisrael gets first, but we're saying that even that Gan Eden gets it even ahead of everybody else. Shenemar, the positive, Noho Yotzim Eden, a river comes out from Eden, Lahashbis has gone to water the garden. Now, the Gemara explains here in Psachim and in other places that there's Gan and there's Eden, there's two separate things. In terminology of Chassidus, we call them Gan Eden Elyon, Gan Eden Atachton. The Gan, the Gemara mentions in other places, nobody has ever seen. Adam and Chava were in Eden. The other way around. Eden, nobody has ever seen. They were in the Gan, which is in Eden. The Pasuk doesn't call it Gan Eden. The Pasuk calls it Gan Bit Eden, the Kedem. Implying there's Eden, and then within that, there's a small part that's called the Gan. That's where Adam and Chava were. But Eden is higher than Ayin L'Rotha, L'Shem Zilasecha, only the Eidishter has seen it, and that's, we talk about in Chassidish terminology, that's Gan Eden Elyon, whereas where Adam and Chava were, and where the Neshamas go after 120, is Gan Eden Atach. And then you have, there's an Omud over there, there's a pillar that they can use to ascend to Gan Eden Elyon, so they're able to reach that level, but it's not such a simple thing. What? Okay, there's Eden, which is beyond that. Okay, I'm fairly certain this place is in Sichus, where the Rebbe talks about this point and says that Eden represents is Gan Eden Elyon, but maybe, I don't know. Okay, anyway. So the point is, Rashi says, we're not exactly learning, because after all, that pasuk is talking about the river that comes from the Eden to water the Gan. But the point is, we see that in the same vein, you have it comes from Eden and then waters the Gan. So we see in the same way, then the rain comes to Gan Eden first, and then it goes to everywhere else. So why is that? Tana, we learn in a Braisa, me tamtis, or me tamtis, base kur, when you have, for example, the amount of water in a keli that you would be able to use to water a base kur is the area where you can plant a kur of grain, the official definition is 75,000 square amas. If you made a square of it, it would be 270 some amas on a side. It's according to Rabbi Chaina, approximately 400 feet. So you're talking maybe like, say, for example, you take an average Crown Heights block is around 700 by 200 by 200 feet. So you're talking about like, your base core would be about two-thirds of a typical Crown Heights block, say. So the amount of water that would take to water one base core from the tamsis, from what seeps out of such a container, shows a tarkov, you could water an area where you would grow a tarkov. Tarkov is short for trev a kav, two kavim, plus another kav, which makes half a saw, because there are six kavim in a saw. The point of a kur contains 30 saw. So therefore, half a saw is going to be 1/60th of a kur. So therefore, we're saying you have a keli that you can use to water a base kur. What's left over in that keli after you finish watering will be 1/60th of the original, and you could use that to water an area of a tarpa. In the same vein, since the Gemara is going to go on to say that the world is 1/60th the size of the Gan, then therefore it follows what we were just saying, that you can have that Hashem waters the Gan first, and then, like, so to speak, what's left over at the bottom of the container is enough for the entire world, 1/60th. So the Gemara goes on to say, Tanan Rabbanan, we learned this in Pesachim as well. Eretz Mitzrayim have your Dalad Meis Parasa, Dalad Meis Parasa. Mitzrayim is 400 by 400 parsa. That is a good deal larger than the modern day country of Egypt. It includes probably parts of Sudan and Libya and whatever other countries over there. So that's 400 by 400 parsa. Or Mitzrayim echa misamach b'kush. Mitzrayim in turn is 1/60th of Kush. It's possible that Kush over here means, Kush usually specifically means Ethiopia. It's very possible over here that Kush means Africa in general. Egypt is a portion of the continent of Africa. Maybe it means if you count the continent, the size of the continent as a whole, then Mitzrayim is 1/60th of that. Anyway, the Kush Echem Mesamach Ba'olam, that in turn is 1/60th of the area of the globe, which is a little hard to understand because that would make Mephoshim actually make the calculation, and it comes out, actually, the Gemara in Pesachim makes the calculation. Rava says in Pesachim over there that Shita Al-Fashinin Havi Alma, that the distance from one end of the world to the other is 6,000 parasa. The Gemara compares and contrasts that with the statement over here. If the surface of the earth is 60 times Kush, which in turn is 60 times in time, which is 400 by 400 parasa, then the Gemara explains over there in Pesachim that the math doesn't work out. So Bapashtus, we're talking about the whole globe. Bapashtus was saying Mitzrayim versus Kush, which may mean Africa, versus the whole globe. But the whole globe is a lot less than 60 times the size of Africa, or whatever it is you're going to consider Kush to be. So the Gemara points out that it's a little hard to understand the math, but it's not meant necessarily in a Gashmiistic sense. Again, this is one of those things that has more of a Ruchmiistic meaning, and it means, in other words, like the whole world, like Kush is Batal relative to the whole world, because Batal B'Shishim, and the same with Mitzrayim relative to Kush. Anyway, the Olam Echa Misamach Began, the whole world is 1/60th the size of the Gan. The Gan Echa Misamach BeEden, which in turn is 1/60th of Eden. The Eden Echa Misamach BeGehenim, which in turn is 1/60th the size of Gehenna. Nimsa Kol Olam Kulik, Kisuk Deir LeGehenim. So it comes out the entire world is only like a lid of a pot relative to Gehenna. If you consider the volume of a lid of a pot versus the volume of how much the pot itself holds, you're going to realize it's a very tiny amount, in the same way the world is very tiny compared to Gehenna. The Gehenim, now what about Gehenim? The Yur of Yeshem and Gehenim, Ein Lo Shir. Some say that Gehenim has no measure. Now what does that mean? Marsha says, yes, of course it has a measure. We just said that it's 60 times the size of Eden. What it means is, according to that, there's nothing larger than it that you can say that Gehenim is 1/60th the size of X. There's no larger X that you could compare Gehenim to. So in that sense, we can say Ein Lo Shir. The Maharal has a different take on it. The Maharal explains B'chlal that whenever we talk about Gehenim, he says Gehenim means the absolute non-existence. That's like the opposite of so it's almost like the opposite of a Likus, which is everything. But the Gehenim is like the absence of anything. And he explains in many places that's what we mean when we talk about Neshamas being consigned to Gehenim and being burnt over there. It means like they completely cease to exist. So anyway, so over here he says the same thing. It means Ein Lo Shir in the sense, since it's a nullity, it's a non-existence. Like you could compare it almost like to a black hole or something. You can't talk about the size of it because it's a very definition of non-existence. And that means you can't talk about a size of it. The Yesh Omim Eden, Ein Lo Shir. Others say that Eden has no limit. Again, the idea being, according to Marsha, the idea would be that there's nothing larger that you can compare to, meaning according to this Manda Omer, according to this Yesh Omim, we would not say that Gehenim is 60 times Eden. Rather, on the contrary, we'd say Eden is the largest thing there is, and therefore there's nothing that you could say is larger than it. According to the Maharal, we would have to say that it means the opposite, that Eden is the absolute existence, the presence of Atmos and Mahus, of the Eidoshe himself, and therefore you can't talk about any shield. Getting back to the matter of rain, and we said before, we had the drasha before about Otsriseha Malayas, that what is it that causes the storehouses of grain, what causes the storehouses to be full of grain is the underground springs, the underground aquifers, that we said, according to Rabbi Eliezer, b'chlal, all the rain comes from there by means of evaporation, and according to Rabbi Yeshua, we didn't mean that, we just meant that to begin with, Hashem created the world with underground aquifers. So now, the Gemara brings a similar drasha in this vein about the relationship between the underground water and the grain and the tavur that grows. So Amar Rav Oshia, my dichtiv, this is the context of this pasuk is talking about Bava. Yumiya has two long nevuahs in his sefer talking about how Bavel, which at that time was the superpower in the world, how they're going to be completely defeated and destroyed. Their city, their capital city of Bavel is going to be a ruin forever and so on and so forth. And he goes on with in these two nevuahs, they're covering well over 100 psukim, talking about the disasters that are going to hit Bavel because of the way they behaved and because of the chutzpah that with which they treated the Jewish people and they treated the Eivishter and destroyed the Besmikdash and so on and so forth. So he says, Shechant Almayim Rabim, you Babel who live by many waters, because Babel has the two big rivers, Chidekel and Pros. It has they had in those days a whole network of canals all over the country that connected them together most of the time. In the Gemara, when it mentions Nahar this or Nahar that, you have Nahar Malkasava and Nahar Papa and so on and so forth, various rivers, Nahar Dor for that matter, that are mentioned in the Gemara most of the time. Those are canals that were dug to join these rivers to each other and to produce a lot of farmland. So the Navi says, Shechant Amayim Rabin, you Bavel that live by many waters, Rabas Oitzris, you who have a lot of treasuries. So that means, Rav Oshia says, Mi Gorim La Bavel, Shiyu Oitzrisea, Malayas Bar, what causes that Bavel's storehouses are so full of grain that it's such a fertile area? Because it lives by great waters, because again it has those two rivers and all those canals and all that. It's a very it's a low lying and well watered area as compared to Eretz Yisrael, which has to largely live off rain. Marsha actually points out an interesting thing. Rashi first brings the end of the pasuk goes bo kitzeh amas bitzeh. Now the simple meaning of the pasuk is bo kitzeh, your end Bavel has come. Amas, because of the measure, like an amma, bitzeich, of your wrongdoing, of your dishonesty, like ma betze kinayr v'sachidu. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is the Navi is telling her, here, Bavel, you think you're so rich and powerful and invincible because you have all that water and therefore you have such a huge supply of grain and food, everything, but you should know your end is coming because of all the dishonesty and dishonest gains that you made. Marashah says also he means it as a double meaning as well. The word amas, besides meaning a measure, can also mean like an amas amayim, a canal, a stream of water. And bitzeh is related to a word, bitzeh mayim means swamps. So therefore, the Navi is continuing to say, bo kitzeh, your end is coming, the end of what? Amas bitzeh, the amos, the canals that you have, and bitzeh, and your swamps, all of those are going to dry up and be gone. In fact, nowadays, you know, anybody who remembers seeing things from the first Gulf War and from the second one, for that matter, remembers how dry most of Iraq looks. All these nevuahs came true very literally. That all of those the rivers are still there, the Chidekel and the Pros, but a lot of those canals have been destroyed over the years, and the whole place is silted up and dried up, and basically mostly a desert. So what causes that your storehouses were so full of grain and that therefore you thought you're on top of the world? The reason is because you bother live by great waters and therefore you thought that that's always going to continue. Omar Rab, so Rab says in this connection, Asira Bavel. Bavel is rich in the sense the chatzavol and mitra, they're able to harvest, they're able to produce crops without rain because they have enough underground water, they have enough of these rivers and canals and underground aquifers and whatnot that they're able to grow grain even and other kinds of produce even without rain. They don't need rain. Now, I mean, so we're saying Bavel is rich in that sense. On the other hand, what it means is that the way the pasuk contrasts Mitzrayim and Eretz Yisrael, where Mitzrayim they have the flooding of the Nile every year, whereas in Eretz Yisrael, the point is in Eretz Yisrael, therefore, a farmer always has to look up at the Eivishter and daven for rain, whereas on the other hand, in Bavel, we're saying that not. A person can go his entire life not realizing that the Eivishter runs the world because he figures you have the constant supply of water on the ground. Omer Abaya, so Abaya says in this connection, at Naktinan, we have the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim, that the reason for that is Tov Ani, because Bavel is a very swampy area. Tov Ani literally means where you can drown in it, and where there's a lot of swamps and quicksand and places like that where you can easily drown. Below Yubshoni, it's not a dry place. So because not just they have all the rivers and whatnot, but it's a very low-lying, the Gemara mentions in a number of places that Bavel is very low-lying, or the Mesa Marble wound up over there, for example. So therefore, it's very low-lying and swampy, and therefore, that's why they're able to be so successful with their produce. That's how Rashi explains this Tuvani v'lo Yushani. Tosfos gives a different explanation that it means that that we're saying you're better off being, if you have a choice between living in an area which is very wet and swampy and where you're in danger of floods versus a place which is more dry and you're in danger of drought, you're better off, says Abaya, living in the first kind of place than in the second. So let's say, to put it in American terms, you're better off living in Florida than you are in Arizona, let's say. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogola, Gimel 7. We have the mitzvah in the Torah of Iskadishnim Ve'yisim Kedoshim. You should make yourselves holy, and you should be holy. And we know that means Kaddish Atzmacha B'Motolach, that a person has to make himself holy and reserved and held back, even with things that are mutter. Even with Inyonei Roshus, you have to infuse them with Kedoshah. B'chol Derechecha De'ehu, and this is in fact a mitzvah Esser Shel Torah. The Alter Rebbe talks about this in Tanya. Earlier than that, Sefer Charedim talks about it at the end of Mitzvah Saseh, famously, that Ramban brings about it at the beginning of Parashas Kedoshim. He understands that that's what the mitzvah of Kedoshim to you means. Anyway, the Rebbe says beyond that, and Chassidus talks about that this avoda of Kaddish Atzmach of Motzalach is what's going to bring the Geula Hasidah. Meaning, it's not just enough to learn Torah. It's not just enough to keep mitzvahs. It's not just enough to stay away from things that are also. To bring the Geula Hasidah, we also need the Kaddish Atzmach of Motzalach. The mentality, like what's described in Hayom Yom, what the Alter Rebbe taught us Chassidim, was Mentorin it, that kind of thing that the Rebbe is bringing in a Sicha and Chelek Aleph is what needed to bring the Geula. Continuing on halachas of Shabbos, you're not allowed to make musical sounds on Shabbos with a keli or with parts of your body except singing with your mouth. So, for example, that would include snapping your fingers or banging on a table or a board or rattling nuts or a bell or whatever to calm down a kid. Also it includes clapping or dancing, although the Alter Rebbe brings in Shulchan Aruch that nowadays we're no you do that and nobody's moicha in it. There's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind it, because now that we're coming closer to the time of the Geula, so therefore we're more able to show these kinds of simcha, these kinds of simcha more openly. The official reason for it that's brought in the Noisa Kalim on Shulchan Aruch is because the official reason behind this Zeta is Shemi Yisak and Klei Shir. You might come to fix musical instruments, and there came a point when people are not so expert at fixing them anymore that you're going to be concerned that if you start clapping and dancing, whatever, that you're going to fix them. But the Rebbe talks about in a sikha the deeper reason behind it. Anyway, another example. Now, though, he continues, L'kavod HaTorah, you are allowed to do these things, for example, on Simchas Torah, and even when it comes to calming down a baby, there are yesh matir, and therefore there is reason to be allowed. Now, on the other hand, he goes on to say, when it's not a musical noise, you are allowed to make it. For example, you can knock on a door. But on the other hand, though, you can't, for obviously, you can't use a bell when it's electrical. He's not even talking about that, because such things didn't even exist when the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch was written. But he gives an example. You have, for example, these door knockers that are meant to make a particular type of noise, so therefore you can't use those door knockers on Shabbos. Another example would be, for example, the type of clocks or watches where you pull a string and they chime. You can't do such things on Shabbos or Yom Tov.